You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
The Democratic Alliance has filed papers in the High Court challenging the recently signed Expropriation Act because it says the act is both unconstitutional, substantively and procedurally. Well, let's explore this now in a little more detail. It really has become a contentious issue. DA Federal Council Chair Helen Ziller is with me and leads our program today. Helen, a very warm welcome. Do you believe you have a winnable case?
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Yes, I do believe we have a winnable case. I'm always very careful before a case goes to court because you can never say that you're certain, but I think we have a very strong case.
Why have you likened this legislation to, and I quote you, the dark days of apartheid?
Well, I don't think I used those exact words, but I definitely used the word apartheid, and I'll tell you why. Because there are so many people in and around Cape Town that I know and that I've spoken to who had the state expropriate their property to make it a white group area and then move them away with minimal compensation. And it's taken them years and years and years to get title deeds again for their houses. So that should be a grave warning to all that you don't give the state that kind of power. You don't give the state a kind of open-ended power to start expropriating property with less than market value or no value at all on a kind of open-ended process. That is fatal. Our restitution acts, which are very important and which the DA supports, the Restitution of Land Rights Act and the Land Reform Act, envisage restitution for past dispossession, which we completely support, but they also envisage a cut-off deadline for that, because the drafters of those laws understood that you need property security to have investment and to have growth. And so that is why they had those cut-off dates. This new 12.4 in the Expropriation Act just opens a door on the never-never and creates massive insecurity of property. And we don't believe that a government should have that power again.
How do you respond to critics who say your opposition simply is about protecting white-owned property rather than ensuring equitable land distribution?
Well, we absolutely support the three acts that are driving equitable land distribution. We are very frustrated with the government's inefficiency in getting it going and their complete incapacity to manage the process. That is the Restitution of Land Rights Act. We're perfectly behind that. And the two Land Reform Acts. And we're very frustrated at the government's just incapacity to get that moving. And it's not going to help to have another provision that extends the government's powers into an act where it shouldn't be in the first place. So the Expropriation Act is meant for infrastructure. It's meant for when the government wants to build roads and bridges and railway lines and dams, and they need to cut across your property to do so, and then they should be negotiating fair market value with you. But there are times at which it could be feasible and adjudicable in a court of law where it might be less than market value. But that's for very specific purposes. The Expropriation Act has never been meant for restitution. There are three other acts that deal with that. But now, because the ANC passed a resolution in 2017 at their Congress, which said there has to be an instrument, a legal instrument for expropriation of land without compensation, they're sneaking it into the Expropriation Act. And we can't accept that. And that does not mean to say that we're protecting white property owners. We're protecting every property owner. We want more and more people to own property. That's why we're giving out so many title deeds where the DA governs. We want more and more people to be property owners. We want them to have title deeds, and we want their property security to be defended.
There's no doubt this is a political hot potato. And let me ask you if this court challenge is an admission that you've run out of political runway, that you are lacking the political power to oppose land expropriation head on, and therefore you've turned to the courts.
Well, we certainly have the political power to do that. We could bring the government down. But you can bring the government down once, only once, and then you lose all your influence. If you've got a solid case that you can take to court, you take it to court. That's what you use. And we have a solid case, we believe, to get this act declared null and void. And we would then start from the beginning and fight it all the way.
In the
We're taking this case to extend our political runway, not to close it.
Helen, within the corridors of power, so to speak, is there still discussion or negotiation happening, even though you've gone to court? Is there still room for any kind of compromise? Is there willingness among your partners within the GNU to discuss this further?
Well, we always hope there is, but they are bound by the ANC's conference's resolution. They tried to change the Constitution. If you remember Clause 25 of the Constitution, we put up a massive fight against that. When they couldn't change the Constitution, they went for the Expropriation Act, which is, as I've just explained, the wrong place to have this. So we are obviously talking. We never stop talking. We would like to talk much more, frankly. We would like to have one-on-ones with the ANC on a regular basis. But we've looked at what it would take to amend that act to really get to the substance of the problem, and it would really take an almost entire redraft, frankly.
You talk about collapsing a government once. I'm interested to know how much stress this really is putting on the GNU right now.
Yes, it's obviously putting on stress. I mean, you know, we're not there to make up the numbers for the ANC to implement the National Democratic Revolution. We are not here to do that. The ANC needs to get that message loud and clear. And they may think the DA's got no alternatives because we don't want the EFF and MK to come into power. But I can tell you, even less does Cyril Ramaphosa and his colleagues want the EFF and MK coming into power, because the price of that would be Cyril Ramaphosa's political life. They will insist on getting rid of him. So, you know, we've got, I think, more leverage, actually, than we are using. And I think we will use more and more and more of it. We obviously don't want to be in a fight with our coalition partners all the time. But then we've got to have some victories. And we've got to make it very clear to them that we need real, tangible victories.
I'm interested to know how you reconcile the legal opposition that you are applying right now to this act with John Steenhuisen's willingness to support Cyril Ramaphosa's diplomatic efforts to reassure the United States. It does seem contradictory.
Well, we have said to the ANC that if you're going to pass laws like this, you must expect the West to reject us. On the other hand, we also understand what it'll mean if America and Western countries cut off aid and trade. And we obviously do not want that. We want South Africa to continue being an ally of the West, actually. That's what we would ideally like, because we support the values of constitutionalism, the rule of law, a market-based economy, non-racialism, all of those things which are a product of Western thinking. And so we are absolutely committed to driving those closer links. But we're saying to the ANC, if you're going to be a center of geopolitical forces that are increasingly being seen to be just an anti-Western conglomerate that acts, for example, as a proxy for Iran to go to the International Criminal Court and other things like that, then the West is going to clap us hard. We would also very much like to say to President Trump, do not punish ordinary South Africans for the failure of the ANC. Do not cut off the AIDS relief money that you have given for so many years, the $8 billion in PEPFAR. Do not cut off our preferential statement under the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act. Do not impose sanctions on South Africa. Please expand trade, don't diminish trade. And we know President Trump. We know he's going to say, well, you know, what does America get out of this deal? And at least we've got to be non-aligned, at least. We like to say that our foreign policy is non-aligned, but it isn't non-aligned. I mean, what are we doing with so many rogue states and aligning with anti-democratic forces around the world and then claim to be non-aligned? Suddenly in Russia, we're non-aligned, but in the Middle East, we're not non-aligned. You know, it's very, very, very strange to me.
So I think I'm hearing you say that you're not giving much chance of success to this diplomatic delegation to the United States.
No, we are. You know, I mean, we've also got our own channels that we're using all the time. And the channels that we're using all the time is to say, please don't punish South Africa. We've got the highest unemployment rate of any country that records unemployment in the world. And the most critical thing for the future stability, which is in the interest of the United States and in the interest of the West, is to grow the economy and to create more jobs. You don't grow an economy without investment. You curtail investment if you don't have property security. So on the one hand, we're arguing with the ANC about what is needed if we want to rescue South Africa. On the other hand, we're saying to President Trump, don't cut South Africa's throat. We're dealing with the problems, but please do not cut South Africa's throat. Please continue with your support and help us fight these crazy policies.
Thank you very much indeed. That's DA Federal Council Chair Helen Ziller. Appreciate your time.